Welcome to Sprouts, radio from the grassroots, a weekly news magazine showcasing the stories and productions from independent reporters. I'm Vinny Lombardo, your host this week at Freak Radio in Santa Cruz, California.
The entire town, the demolition orders came due, so the mosque, the medical center, our kindergarten, 16 homes, all up for demolition. By people calling their congresspeople, the bulldozers were stopped after just two homes were demolished.
Today on Sprouts, we'll hear about a campaign to rebuild homes in the Gaza Strip, beginning with the home Rachel Corey was defending the day she was killed by an Israeli military bulldozer. Stay tuned.
Oh, Rafa, aching of refugees, aching of tumbled houses, bicycles severed from tank-warped tires, an aching of bullet-riddled homes, all homes worm-eaten by bullets, and then impregnated through bullet holes by birds. Oh, Rafa, aching fingers of Rafa. Children born without fingers and fathers unable to travel the 20 or 30 miles to Gaza to repair their children's fingers. Clawed knuckles from old gunshots, bandaged fingers, and slimy small poking fingers between puffy lips of children, slobbery and wondering and blinking like all children, but fingers padding and tapping its strange big hands amidst the music of shelling and the constant anonymous night vision telescope of murder above and beyond and around and even inside. Fingers, cracked crusts of spackle concrete fingers of the endless rebuilding of things crashed. Home, home. Oh, Rafa. Aching homes of Rafa. Home of the Rafa camp, Rafa grown permanent with the names of the countries that paid for the neighborhoods still attached. Home of Rafa, unleavable. Homes stickered with glow-in-the-dark stars in teenagers' rooms. Homes constructed over a lifetime and unraveled in the night. Ache of rubble and weedy rebar craning out of concrete boulders. Ache of ghost homes looming without volume, without mass, straddling this wall and this wasteland the wall demands. Ache of dinners, knees and haunches, kneeling dinners spread over floors in the music of gunfire, the irregular heartbeat of the border, and living dead homes waiting immobile for bulldozers and tanks and the shattering of tea glasses, the bending of rebar, the tumbling of concrete, and the ejection of people. Baby, grandmother, small girl curling her entire small hand around one big finger. Teenage boy with teenage boy legs and teenage boy laugh, ejected into rubble and homelessness and scattered, if not killed. Oh, Rafa, aching Rafa. Children of Rafa exploded. Children of Rafa deafened. Deafened to tank wheels. Deafened to explosions. Gunshot music. Shocking claps. Drones.
That was Cindy Corey reading the last poem written by her daughter Rachel. Rachel Corey, a 23-year-old student from Olympia, Washington, was in Rafah in the Gaza Strip working with the International Solidarity Movement, a Palestinian-led group using nonviolent tactics to end the Israeli military occupation. On October 16, 2003, Rachel was trying to prevent the demolition of the Nasrallah family home. After a tense standoff, she sat down in the dirt 20 feet in front of a bulldozer to block its path. Despite her nonviolent resistance, the bulldozer lurched forward, pushing up dirt as it drove close to her. Rachel, clad in a bright orange vest and shouting to the driver through a megaphone, climbed up on the pile and for a moment was eye level with the driver. Nonetheless, he continued pushing forward until the mound under Rachel gave way and she fell into the dirt. As the other activists witnessing this came running, the driver continued pushing until Rachel was under the blade of the bulldozer. Then, after a slight pause, backed away without lifting the blade, so it hit her again. Rachel Corey was pronounced dead at the hospital a short time later. Within days, the Israeli government stated that Rachel's death was a regrettable mistake. In the 2+ years since the horrific death, no independent investigation has ever been conducted, and those responsible for the killing have not been brought to justice. The Nasrallah family continued living in the home Rachel protected for 7 months after her death. But in October 2003, the IDF knocked a hole in an outer wall and dug a trench around it, forcing the family out. The house was ultimately destroyed in January 2004. But the Rebuilding Alliance, a U.S.-based nonprofit, is mobilizing thousands of Americans to help rebuild these demolished homes, in the name of Rachel Corey, beginning with the Nasrallah home. By working through Congress, petitioning Israeli courts, and raising money, the group is working to safeguard fair housing rights in conflict zones, starting with Israel and Palestine. Khaled and Samala Nasrallah, residents of the home, along with Cindy and Craig Corey, Rachel's parents, went on a speaking tour of 7 West Coast and Midwest states through the month of June. They visited Santa Cruz June 12th. This week on Sprouts, we hear highlights from the event. Donna Baranski-Walker, director of Rebuilding Alliance, explains why the group came together.
We're focusing on the West Bank and Gaza in our rebuilding efforts. The entire area that we're talking about can fit into the pocket of back East Virginia there. Gaza certainly separated from the West Bank, both being occupied territories. And the town that we're focusing on tonight is Rafah, Gaza. In this particular census, it was 140,000. Now census numbers are saying almost 160,000 people. Significant number of refugees, 60%. It is now the town that's had more homes demolished than any other in the West Bank and Gaza. And as you'll hear, 2,200 homes demolished in this town alone. Then also Darbala, that's an important city to keep in mind because some of our good news focuses on that little town. The Rebuilding Alliance, we started with a global campaign to help rebuild Palestinian homes. And that was back in June of 2002. We started without any real funding, but right then Jenin was happening. And if you're reading your email like I was mine, there were very real people being bulldozed in their homes. And the only thing we knew how to do was working with Israelis and Palestinians, with Jeff Halper's group and Jerusalem Center for Social and Economic Rights. We knew how to bring people together to rebuild homes. And that had to count for something really important. It had to be a response. And so my team, we all pitched in, put our expenses on our credit cards, launched the whole effort and got it started. And that was the thing that propelled us forward. So we built 6 houses. We built a kindergarten over in the West Bank in Al-Aqaba. And then we built a peace center, the Shawamre home. We actually helped build it 5 times. The case that we helped pay for in the Israeli Supreme Court will protect it from further demolition. But the kindergarten that we built, which I'm very happy to say has 80 children in it, just after construction started, the entire town, the demolition orders came due. So the mosque, the medical center, our kindergarten, 16 homes, all up for demolition. By people calling their congresspeople, the bulldozers were stopped after just 2 homes were demolished. And we took that case to the Israeli Supreme Court, where it will come forward this month. So it may well be that we'll ask you to pay attention to it again. That was our safest project, and I learned that under occupation, it means unpredictability. And so being able to tell the story and stick with it is something I'll ask you to do with this home, as well as all of our others. Why Gaza? Why now? Well, you're going to see in very short order the truly sad stories of people being uprooted from their homes as the settlers begin to be perhaps moved out. It's hard to tell yet if that disengagement or redeployment will actually take place. It's going to be really important to have some marker there in Gaza, some place where we can turn the world's attention and say, look, there's another side to this story. There's the side of people who've lost their homes, who deserve the right to rebuild, who deserve the right to rebuild on their own land. And here's part of that story. So what you're doing in hearing this story and in helping us move forward with building, it's to make that possible, to not only build that home and hundreds more after it in this, what we hope will be a momentum building event, but also to bring the world's attention to Gaza now in July when we break ground on that home.
That was Donna Baranski-Walker, director of Rebuilding Alliance. Next, we hear from Sama Nasrallah, who lived in the home Rachel was trying to defend. She was interviewed by Donna Baranski-Walker.
Sama, tell me about your family. I know that you grew up in Rafah.
Her name is Samah. She was born and raised in Rafah. It's her home, and she loves it. She has very, very wonderful memories in her hometown of Rafah. Specifically, she's from an area inside Rafah called Yibna. She studied in college, specialized in history and geography, and her father worked inside Israel as a paint worker, and he was able to educate all of his children.
The home that Rachel came to visit was the one on the Philadelphia corridor. Can you tell us when you first moved there? What was the circumstance that brought you to live in that home?
The house they lived in Rafah is about 100 meters from the border with Egypt, and she moved into the house in 1999 when she and Khaled got married. Her life in Rafah was very, very simple. It was a wonderful time that she spent when she first got married before the Second Intifada started. Soon after her first child, Maryam, was born, the Second Intifada started. And before that time, their life was really very, very calm. After that, everything changed for them. Prior to the onset of the Second Intifada, she could not imagine in her wildest dreams that her home that they had built there would be a target for shelling and for gunfire the way it was.
One thing that's come up, people have been surprised that you would live in such a dangerous area, and even after Rachel was killed, your house was the only one left standing when the rest of the neighborhood was completely demolished and the bulldozers would pass by each night. Like, why would you stay in such a dangerous place?
It was home, after all. All their belongings were inside this house. They had painstakingly decorated the house, and you know, it was home for them. They felt attached to the house. And another reason why they stuck on was that she didn't want to repeat the experience of her parents after themselves having been dislocated from their home from within the 1948 zone upon the establishment of the State of Israel. Another reason why they stuck on in their home was because of the death of Rachel. She was killed defending that home, so they felt more attached to their cause. And for the mere fact that Rachel was such a wonderful, loving and compassionate person who played with their kids and essentially became part of their family, so that was another reason for them to be further attached to their home.
My last question is just, what would you hope going forward? What would you like your children to grow up to be?
All she hopes for her children is to live in security, and she wants essentially to have a home where she can live with her husband and her children in peace and in security. She lived through the first intifada, now the second intifada, and she wants essentially a better future for her children. She wanted to convey the message that the most difficult thing for a parent is to have their children suffer and essentially be in a state of insecurity all the time. And so all she wants for her children and for herself and her family is just peace and security.
You're listening to Sprouts, radio from the grassroots, a weekly news magazine produced by independent reporters at community stations across the country. This week, we learn about the Rebuilding Alliance, an effort to help Palestinian families keep their homes. To find out more, visit www.rebuildingalliance.org. Along with thousands of others, the Nasrallah family was displaced from their homeland after 1948 and dispersed throughout Jordan and Gaza. Before the 1967 war, the family settled in Egypt, but with the signing of the Oslo Accords in 1993, the Nasrallahs had a hope of peace and returned to Rafah in 1994. Next, we hear from Khaled Nasrallah, who describes life after 1994 and the terror of living in a war zone.
You know, it's a new feeling that you are living in your homeland, not as a refugee in another country. And it has been very good years we spent before the Intifada. I feel the normal people live like this because the first time I felt I am normal. I live in my own land between my relevant, and it is good, a new and good feeling I felt at that time. And it has, and I got married with Samah, and it has been good years for us. After that, the Intifada started, and our home became on the first gunfire line, and we faced daily shooting in our home from mostly all direction. But we become more experienced when we hear the tank came from this side. We run to the rooms in other side, and the tanks came from this side. We run to other side to avoid the bullets. When the tanks came from the two side, we go to the bathroom, which is in the middle of the home. But it's not security enough, as the one bullet from the tank is go through three walls, not one. But it's psychological, we are in safe place. At the same time, we can't move from our second floor to the first floor with my brother, as also they shut the stairs, so we can't move. We stuck in the home, and one day we slept all the day with our children in the bathroom, as it has been outside the home, the World War III, because it has been very bad night. We used to hear this explosion and bullets and so on, but some days you think if it is the World War, it's not normal that what is happening outside. Also, they used to make a big holes in this side of our home, which is facing the borders, and put suction bombs, which make the home like earthquake. It is very hard times, because if you go outside the home, they will shoot you, and if you stay inside the home, you are afraid because it's a strong explosion. At that time, Rachel came with the international solidarity movement, and they have been news and very good people. They are coming to see what is happening on land, not through the media. And they helped us very much. By the Intifada, it's coming worse and worse, and after the death of Rachel, we become more crazy because they intensive their work around our home, because we have been the only home in the neighborhood. So we go to find a solution to reduce the pressure on our mind to don't become crazy. So we found the solution is the rabbits. We bought books about how growing rabbits and start to build the homes for the rabbits. We start with 3 rabbits, and after 3 months it become 30 rabbits. Because we are prohibited to go outside the home, and nobody come to us because we are in danger place. But when the army came to demolish our home, I asked the officer to let me open the door to let the rabbits go in the open places to avoid killing them. But he refused and arrested us for 3 days. At that, we have been very sad, and it's very hard to us hear that our rabbits were killed. But after 3 days, he let us go after the make the very deep digging around three sides of our home. It's 7 meters in depth. Let's home moving and keep us for 3 days inside while the machine is continue digging and make work around. To let, we feel that he wants the home demolish on us. The campaign finished, and I bring the rabbits and give them to one of my friend who care and love rabbits to continue caring of them. As we started from this day, after they cut the water, the electricity, the telephone, the sewage, all kind of lives they destroyed, so we have, and the home become moving. So we forced it to leave for the third time our home and start to rent in homes. After that, we rent me and my father. My father forced also to leave his home 6 times because each apartment he rent, there is invasion and demolishing, and he continue. But for me, as I have been working in Gaza City, I rent in Gaza to avoid waiting on the checkpoints for 5 or 10 days. Nobody knows how long you will stay in the checkpoints to move from Rafah to Gaza, which is inside Gaza Strip, and take 1 hour. You may take 1 month because and can't back to your home because the checkpoint is closed from the Israeli side. After this experience which I faced in this intifada, all my hope that this experience didn't go the next generation, not only Palestinian generation, but also Israeli generation. As the two nations used to, in the past, to talk together by guns, but 50 years without any result. So we need another approach to solution. It is peace, not peace in television, but peace on land. We want to create the trust and the humanity between the two nations on the land, not in television. Thank you.
That was Khaled Nasrallah. We end the program with some words from Rachel's father, Craig Corey.
I went to Rafah, and the first day I was there, one of the first hours, I got a chance to look out over the roofs of Rafah. It's all concrete construction like that, flat roofs, and they all have this rebar sticking out of the roof. It's like they're unfinished. And so I asked my friend, Muhammad, I said, what's up with the rebar, Muhammad? And he explained to me that unlike in the United States, in Rafah, you build a ground floor for yourself, and then you build the floor above that for your children. And you build the floor above that for your children's children. And so in Rafah, that rebar looks to the future. And at home doesn't just talk about going back generations. It talks about going forward generations. And when you think about that, as I did, we had 6 days and 5 nights in Rafah to look around in all those homes, like Khaled's home on the border. They've got the rebar up the top, and they've got the bullet holes in the bottom. And you try to put that together, and you talk about a nonviolent resistance to oppression, and just simply living in those homes is part of that. Another thought I want to share with you is, I guess, solidarity with that, living with people in that sort of oppression. We've talked to a lot of Muslim Americans, Muslims, Arabs, Arab Americans. They talked to us about their feeling for Rachel, and what it was is that Rachel stood there with him. Now, I know, I'm an old Army veteran. It seems to me the difference between Rachel and all those other ISM members, the people that go with the Christian Peacemaker Team, there are all sorts of good people that go to Palestine and stand there like Rachel did. The real difference is that a bulldozer operated and stopped. That's kind of the truth of it. But still, she becomes a symbol. She becomes a symbol of the people of the United States, as you heard Khaled talk about, that stand in solidarity with people everywhere and people in Palestine. And that's very different than our government policies, extremely different. And yet the people in Palestine make that distinction without Cindy and me being recognized as we walk through the streets of Rafah or East Jerusalem. We were treated politely. I never actually heard anything against Americans. And they know we were Americans. Hey, we're dressed, you know, from the West, and we got goofy grins on our face. We're American. And, you know, we're always treated with politeness. So I think it's real important that we continue what Rachel started, which is to show that sort of caring at a grassroots level. It's very important to me that these homes, starting with the Nasrallah home, are built by just common Americans. So we don't just go out and get somebody with that can write out one check and do this. We need to get us all working on it because it sends a message. And so how do we send that message is the last thought I've got to share with you. And it comes from actually the celebration that we had for Rachel's life the Saturday after she was killed back in Olympia. And we had three religious people speaking there. Well, there are probably more than that, but three kind of representing religious viewpoints. We had, of course, a Christian minister, and we had my brother-in-law, who's Jewish, spoke and gave a prayer. And then we had an imam. And I want to tell you a little bit, and those of you, I think, that know the Islamic faith, this is probably all just sort of normal for a funeral to you, but it wasn't normal to me. And so I want to tell you a little bit about what he said. Because he said, you know, you have three things in life. You have your friends, you have what you own, the things you own, and you have your deeds, what you've done. And he said, you don't take your friends with you. They don't go to heaven with you. We're all still here. And I think there's a poem that says, your friends go to the graveside, but they don't go any farther. And he said, you know, the things you own, your objects, you can't drive a Maserati to heaven. You can't take it with you. I think a poem says, your objects don't even make it out of your house. They stay there. So it's your good deeds that go with you to heaven. And it's your good deeds that you take with you that speak for you in the next life. So I'm really feeling pretty proud of Rachel. I'm her dad. I'm feeling pretty good when I'm sitting there. All of a sudden, while I'm sitting there, I realize he's not talking to Rachel. He's talking to me. He's saying, what have you done? And so I guess I'm using that to talk to all of you, too. Thank you.
That's it for this week's Sprouts, radio from the grassroots. I'm Vinny Lombardo, this week's host and producer from Freak Radio. Sprouts is distributed and coordinated by the Pacifica Radio Network, thanks to Jim Bennett and Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. Air Traffic Controller is Ursula Rudenberg. You can find Sprouts archives and lots of other great programming online at audioport.org. And thanks for listening.